This is John Wall from the Washington Wizards, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskerings on KOAL 750 AM.
Wall shoots over Bayless. Dagger! John Wall with a career-high 47 points.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM, 750 AM. Going to recap the national championship game last night. And before we get into it, I know I mentioned this earlier, but really, it was one of the more non-entertaining championship games that I have seen in quite some time. We're going to talk about where things went wrong in this contest. And this is a night where the NCAA, they kind of rule the roost when it comes to basketball. We only had one NBA game last night. And I think a lot of the fringe fans maybe would be a little bit upset at the outcome. Not necessarily the outcome, but the way this game actually moved. I mean, very slow-paced, slow-moving game. Joining us right now to talk about that and more, we have Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Jameson, good as always to get you on. Thank you.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me as always. Definitely appreciate it.
Slow game. I mean, that's really the way to describe how things went last night. We had so many fouls. The second half dragged on for a very long time. And at the end of the day, Jameson, I don't want to say I feel cheated because I'm not entitled to a heavy, you know, hardcore national championship contest. Although that was a game that I think a lot of people had high expectations for, and it failed to meet them.
Well, and one of the big reasons why it failed to meet one. There wasn't a whole lot of future NBA talent on the court. I think people need to realize that from the jump. Zach Collins is going to be a pro. Jackson from Carolina is probably going to be an NBA player, or he'll be an NBA player after that. And you got Nigel Williams-Scott that might be in the league for a while. He may not. Like, I mean, the talent, the upper echelon of talent wasn't all the way there as we expected to be on a championship game. Now, however, the biggest part that everyone's talking about is the officiating. The officiating was rough last night. It was bad, not just because it fouled one team over another. It's because there was like 9 fouls in the first 4 minutes of the second half. So any flow that the first half had, the second half didn't have that at all. So it was going to be brutal. I always say whenever both teams are in the double bonus with 10 minutes to go, there's a huge problem in that game. That means that either the game's being called too tight or that there is another problem between those two teams. So it's just one of those things where it was just a rough night all the way around. But that kind of college basketball in a nutshell. Like when this is a regular college basketball game in the 60s for the most part. Slow game with a lot of turnovers, a lot of missed shots. This is a normal college basketball game. Those of us that cover it and that watch it, this is the norm, unfortunately. I mean, it's rough to admit it, but this is kind of what the product is right now. And if you don't have a Kentucky or a Duke that has a bunch of one-and-done players on your team, then this is kind of the product you're going to get. Now, here's the thing. Carolina gets very good players. They get five-star McDonald's All-American guys all the time. They just don't come out after their first year. Either they're not ready or that's not how they do things there. So even though Carolina has similar type of talent at the freshman level, they don't always come out after their freshman year. A lot of them come out after their sophomore, junior, even senior years. That's kind of how that goes. But honestly, with that being said, the game was still, with all the stuff going on, it was still a one-point game with under a minute left.
Right, right. And look, that's the kind of game that North Carolina wanted it to be. I mean, let's be honest here. Roy Williams, the guy's a very good basketball coach. He's one of the greatest college basketball coaches that we have ever seen. He knows that North Carolina is deeper than Gonzaga. To have both teams in the double bonus with 10 minutes to play, that's a clear benefit to North Carolina, and I think they played that way. With that being said, you mentioned it, a one-point game as we get down to under a minute, and the fact was Karnowski was not good last night for Gonzaga. In fact, he goes 1 of 8 from the field, 7 of 9 from the free throw line. He missed, I can't count how many, 5 or 6 shots, Jameson, off of the low block that he normally converts, and if he does that, Gonzaga's up double digits.
Right, you know, they win the game. If he hits half a shot, they win the game. And that's the thing. That's why I don't get too much involved in officiating, because the calls were bad both ways. Like, it was bad both ways. People were keying in on Collins, having a couple of bad fouls. That's true, and it did affect the game. But at the end of the day, you still had a one-point game with a minute to go. So at that point, it's anyone's ball game. It just comes down to who's going to make a play. But, Gonzaga was right there. I mean, you got to give them credit. We don't know if they'll ever be here again. A team like that, this was a kind of a weird year for them. They had a fifth-year senior They had a grad transfer in Jordan Matthews. They had a transfer in Nigel Williams-Goss, who was McDonald's All-American and got like 18 a game at Washington a couple years ago. Of course, Zach Collins, who was a McDonald's All-American last year out here from Vegas. So it's one of those things where they had they didn't have a West Coast Conference type of team. They had a Carolina type of team. They had that kind of team. They weren't as deep as Carolina, but they had that kind of team on paper for the first maybe six or seven guys. They had that. They just didn't – it just didn't work out. Now, we don't know if this will ever happen in Carolina. We know they're going to be back. It's just a matter of time. Everyone that stays there 4 years ends up going to a Final Four. That's because kind of how they operate. So this is one of those things, but it'll be interesting to see what's next for Gonzaga, because this is, of course, the best team they've ever had. And I don't know if they'll ever be able to reach this or how it will change the recruiting, because they don't go out and get a bunch of McDonald's All-Americans all the time. That doesn't kind of work out that way. So I'm kind of interested to see where they go from here.
Yeah, we had this conversation on the show yesterday. Even though Mark Few has never, you know, that was the first time he's ever coached in a championship game, he's been on the big stage before. I mean, Gonzaga has gone into tournaments with a target on their back before. He's been able to recruit top-notch, you know, top 10, top 13 picks in the NBA draft before. But it just, this, I think you hit it right on the head. It just had a little bit of a different feel to it front to back this year for Gonzaga. Typically, we're talking about one or two guys that will propel this team. They actually had a complete team this year.
Man, they had a very complete team. I mean, here's where the grad transfer, everyone talks about the grad transfer rule is bad for basketball. No, it's not. The grad transfer rule is awesome for basketball because you get guys to get into different situations that they normally wouldn't be in. Personally, I love the rule. I remember when the rule came out, it started, I think, football, actually. Well, no, Kevin Kruger was actually the first grad transfer there was, and he came from Arizona State to UNLV back in like 07, and that was the thing that kicked everything off. And it was really good. I think it's benefited more than anything. And a team like Gonzaga, where they're in a small conference, but they benefit from it because there's a lot of people, a lot of players that want to be in that environment. And at the same time, if you're a grad transfer, you actually have to put the schoolwork in. I mean, there was an article on Jordan Matthews that he had to take like six courses over the summer just to be able to transfer over. And then when he got to Gonzaga, he had to take another five, while he was playing. So it's actually a good situation. It's something that I hope they keep. It also makes things exciting as well, because if you graduate, you should be able to go somewhere else for that extra year.
The grad transfer rule does not play nearly as big as an impact in basketball as it does in football, because we don't have that many kids playing at an elite level staying for 4 years. Now, this was unique, again, with Gonzaga. I get what you're saying. I love the rule. I really do, Jameson. I agree with you 100%. If you graduate with your bachelor's degree from school and you have one more year of eligibility elsewhere, you should be able to go wherever you want to go. And the rule is set up to where you have to go to a program that doesn't offer the master's program that you want to pursue. So I think it's perfect. I think it does play a bigger impact in football than it does basketball, just based on the time frame that these kids are leaving school to go to the pros.
Right, right. And every now and then you get a diamond in the rough. Remember, a lot of guys are late bloomers. You know, some guys don't peak at 18 or 19. Some guys get better at 21, 22. So there is guys that can help. But very rarely do you get a guy that scored – very rarely do you get two transfers that scored over 15 points a game in the Pac-12. That very rarely happens. Like, you're not going to get that every year. And also you're not going to get a Zach Collins type every year, because Zach is special. Covering him out here in Las Vegas for all these years, he's a special player. He's a guy that's a special, special athlete. So you're not going to get that. But with that being said, Gonzaga is still going to get good players. They're still going to be in the hunt. It's just that these kind of teams like this, they don't come around every year, because they had the perfect college team. They had a perfect mixture of young guys, older guys. It just didn't quite pan out at the end. But they were right there, and that's all you can ask for going into the game. All you can ask for is have a chance to win it with a minute to go. If it's a one-possession game with a minute to go and you have the ball, that's all you can ask for.
Let's talk about North Carolina here. For the struggles that Karnowski encountered throughout the game, Kennedy Meeks' stat line isn't necessarily going to jump out at you. 10 boards, 7 points, 2 blocks. He adjusted several shots last night. He was very, very good in this game, Jameson.
He was very good. I mean, he was botting up Karnowski the whole night. He made things very difficult for him, even though he may have not blocked a lot of shots of his, but he made things very difficult. He also made things difficult on whomever was coming into the paint for Gonzaga. So Kennedy Meeks is a guy that I don't know what his game is at the next level, but he's a big guy, and he made his presence felt last night. Of course, he had a great game on Saturday where he went for like 20, I think it was like 24 and 14 or something like that. But last night, it was more of his presence, and not necessarily his stats, but his presence made the difference, and that's what it takes. I mean, you kind of had a feel that they weren't going to lose the game after what happened last year. You kind of got that feel. You know, it was a close game. You kind of felt that they weren't going to lose that game. And he was a big part of that. Kennedy Meeks is a guy that he really, really stepped up in this Final Four. He was really – I thought he should have been the most outstanding player of the Final Four because Barry was horrific on Saturday. I've never seen a player be that horrific on one Final Four game and get the MOP award the next game. I've never seen that before. But, you know, it is what it is. But Kennedy Meeks is the guy, for me, that was most consistent guy for them in this tournament and in this Final Four. He's the guy. He's the reason why they won this whole thing.
We have to talk about Roy Williams. He is now in elite air, to say the least. One of six D1 basketball coaches with three or more titles. John Wooden has 10. Coach K has 5. Adolph Rupp has 4. Jim Calhoun, Bobby Knight, and now Roy Williams with 3. Where do you put him all time? And obviously this affects his legacy. I remember when Jim Calhoun won his last championship, we were talking about, hey, let's not overlook Calhoun here when we talk about some of the greatest coaches. It's difficult to win national championships, and now Roy Williams has 3.
Here's the thing. It all depends where you win them at. If you win 3 championships at Carolina, you're going to be known. If you win 3 at Indiana, you're going to be known. If you win 3 at Connecticut, people really don't fall. I mean, as you know, when Connecticut was in the Big East, of course it was a story because they're in the Big East, and the Big East was the best conference in the land at that time. Nowadays, Connecticut's in the AAU or whatever it's called, AAC, sorry, and it kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Like, you don't hear about it as much as you would. Like, if Calhoun coached at Kansas, you would be hearing about him being one of the best coaches of all time. But when you're at a smaller school like Connecticut, even though they're in a big conference, they weren't one of the bigger schools in the Big East. Like, you had Syracuse, Georgetown. You know, you had those schools that got a lot more, that were a lot more bigger in just, you know, who they were. So it's a little bit different, but with that being said, if you win 3 national championships or more, you are a special coach and you've done great things. Roy Williams, for all the flack he gets, and I'm one of the people giving flack at times, he's done a hell of a job. If you have 3 championships, been to a couple more Final Fours, you've done something right, and he has. And he's the reason why Carolina, they have a mold, they have a system. They don't get a whole lot of one-and-done guys. They get a lot of guys that fit their system. They always have a bunch of bigs. They're going to own the glass. Their guards are good. Then they're going to have a special team. But they're going to own the glass. If they're not making shots, they're going to get a bunch of offensive rebounds. And then on the other end, they're going to swarm you on defense, and they're going to make things difficult for you to finish in the paint. That's who they are every year. It doesn't change. But every year they have multiple bigs that are good bigs in high school, and that usually take 3 to 4 years to pan out. But they usually do, and every 4 years they end up in the Final Four.
Right. Right. You know, you mentioned Jim Calhoun. I'll tell you one thing that does not help Jim Calhoun's legacy. The guy was a jerk. He was great for UConn basketball, but nobody else in the country ever embraced Jim Calhoun because he wasn't a nice guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, here's the thing. That and also, like I said, Connecticut wasn't the biggest school. Like, you don't have people going to bat for Connecticut. Like, you have people going to bat for Kentucky, Duke, Kansas. You know, the big schools, even Indiana, which is not the biggest school, but it's a bigger brand. They take it a lot more serious at Indiana than anywhere else. At UConn, I mean, Calhoun's not the best coach in the school's history there. So it's one of those things where even though he did an amazing job, especially at a school like that that doesn't have the same resources as other schools, he kind of gets overlooked because, one, Gino Auriemma is there. So that's one. And two, like you mentioned, he wasn't the nicest guy. Even though he's tried media, he's in media now. He wasn't the nicest guy, so that does play a part in it. But his resume is up there with anybody else, especially doing it where he did it at. That's very impressive. At Connecticut, where it's not a traditional power. Like, you know, Carolina's been a power since day one. Indiana has been a power for a long time. You know, Duke, Kansas, all those have been traditional blue blood powers. Connecticut wasn't that. He turned Connecticut into that. But Connecticut before the 90s wasn't a basketball school. It was just another school. It wasn't a basketball power. So to do that, especially do it within since 99, so we're almost looking like 18, 19 years, that's very impressive. That's extremely impressive.
We'll end with this. We'll relate this to the NBA. I believe that Justin Jackson will be the highest picked player from the national championship game in the draft. Does Zach Collins come out, or do you see him going back one more year?
He should come out, because if he comes out, he will be the highest picked player. If Zach Collins comes out, he's a lottery pick. Not trying to be funny, not trying to have any hot takes, but a seven-footer that's that young and that polished, if he comes out, he will be a top 14 pick. I don't see Justin Jackson going in the top 14. I see him going in the first round, but I don't see him going that high. Zach Collins at 7 foot, being 18 years old, with that kind of game and with room to grow, he will be in someone's lottery. He will be in the lottery. That's just how it goes. Now, whether he goes back or not, I think it's 50-50, but he should go. I don't know if his stock is any higher. Here's the thing. At Gonzaga this year, he had the perfect situation. He didn't have to be the man. At the same time, he fit in well because there's other guys that could lessen the load. So all he had to do is do what he was good at. Next year, if he comes back, he's going to be the guy everybody focuses on. So it's a lot more difficult when you're the guy defenses have to focus with. This year, he was the guy who was the sixth man on the team. So, you know, teams adjusted to him, but they weren't focusing, keying in on taking him away. I think it'd be best if he were to go, because when the iron is hot, you better strike, because sometimes when you get exposed or when things change, they'll find reasons to not draft you. But if Zach Collins goes, he'll be the highest. If not, Justin Jackson definitely. And after that, I mean, who knows? I think Nigel Williams-Goss is maybe a mid second round pick at best if he comes out.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know what I mean? So after that, it gets after him, I don't think we have an NBA player on this out of that game last night. I don't think so, unless some guys dramatically improve over the next couple of years. But I don't see anybody that I can say, oh, yeah, he'll be in the league in 2 years. I don't see that at this time.
Jameson, it's always fun to talk with you. Next week, we'll get back to NBA basketball as we start talking playoffs. Tonight, the Jazz taking on the Portland Trail Blazers. Huge game on both ends for both squads. I mean, the Jazz trying to clinch that home court, or I guess keep that home court advantage in the opening round. The Blazers just trying to get into the Western Conference playoffs. So we'll talk more NBA basketball next week. Always a pleasure to get you on.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
We're going to break for just a moment. We'll come back with the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports right after this.